I'm going to say a prayer and then do the teaching. Father, I thank you for this opportunity to share insights that I believe you have given to me, and I pray that only your words will come forth and mine will not, and that your words will flourish and mine will die, and that the hearts and the minds and the eyes and the ears of those who hear this message will be opened and they will understand. I pray this in Yeshua's name. I'm going to address eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth law in this Torah portion. I've not addressed this ever in the past, or if I have, it's been a passing mentioned. I have had a little trouble reconciling eye for an eye with the Beatitudes, and so I've been praying, and I believe that Yahweh showed me some things about this, and at least these things have helped me, so hopefully they will help you. Just as the letter of the law contrasts the spirit of the law, so does the inclinations of the natural man contrast with the inclinations of the spiritual man. Our study of Mishpatim, and in particular the eye for an eye, will point this out. Mishpatim probably has the greatest contrast between the letter of the law and its spirit, and certainly it points out the great contrast between the natural man and his understanding and inclination, and its inclinations compared to the inclination of the spiritual man. But we have to ask the question, are the letter and the spirit of the law, the eye for an eye law, opposed to each other in Mishpatim? Well, let's find out. Mishpatim, eye for eye, is called the law of retaliation, the outcome of man's natural desire to punish others for wrongdoing. The eye for eye law says that criminals should receive as punishment precisely those injuries and damages they had inflicted upon their victims. The Hebrew word mishpatim means judgments. These are court rulings. They have been decided in a court. Which court would it have been that decided these judgments that the Israelites are now hearing from Moses at Mount Sinai? Well, aside from those that have to do with Yahweh, the other ones were probably gotten from Moses sitting on the mountain judging conflicts in Exodus 18:13. So what is the purpose of a judgment? Well, in the case of the eye for an eye, it allows the collection of a debt, but regulates the kind and extent of punishment. And it goes anywhere from life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burning for burning, wound for wound, and stripe for stripe. Why was this law of judgments, Mishpatim, given? Well, Paul explains why. In Galatians 3:19, he asks, why then the law? It was added because of transgressions, until the seed should come to those to whom it had been promised, being ordained through angels in the mediator's hand. Being ordained through, instead of angels, messengers, prophets, in Moses' hand. It was Moses who adjudicated these eye-for-eye laws even before the covenant was given. Yeshua would, 1,500 years later, speak of the same thing, but from a different viewpoint. He would explain that there is a higher standard for resolving conflicts, and he would give them another choice that they had not yet figured out. Moses had the right to make law, according to Deuteronomy 17:8-13, and his judgments became law, Mishpatim. In Deuteronomy 17:8, it says, "If a matter is too hard for you in judgment between blood and blood, between plea and plea, and between stroke and stroke, matters of strife within your gates, then you shall arise and go up to the place which Yahweh your God shall choose. And you shall come to the priests of the Levites and to the judge that shall be in those days and ask. And they shall declare to you the sentence of judgment, Mishpat. And you shall do according to the sentence which they declare to you from that place which Yahweh shall choose. And you shall be careful to do according to all that they tell you, according to the sentence of the law which they shall teach you, and according to the judgment which they shall tell you, you shall do. You shall not turn aside from the sentence which they shall show you to the right hand or the left. And the man that acts proudly and will not listen to the priest who stands to minister there before Yahweh your God, or to the judge, even that man shall die, and you shall put away the evil from Israel. And all the people shall hear and fear, and not be presumptuous any more." Moses was Israel's first judge, and his sentences became law. So while our forefathers were committing crimes against each other in the wilderness and even back in Egypt and wanting retribution and vengeance, Moses was judging those matters and declaring sentences that had become judgments, mishpatim, also known as the law of retaliation, eye for eye, and are part of our Torah. Retaliation in Israel began with the conflict between Esau and Jacob, and then between Jacob's 12 sons, who have been at each other's throats for over 3,700 years. Look what they did to Joseph. He could have retaliated exceedingly, but he didn't. They thought he might, but why didn't Joseph retaliate? Why didn't he do eye for eye? It goes forward to Matthew 5, verses 1 through 12. Blessed be the, blessed are the. Joseph understood way back then what Moses understood later, but had to write into law. And Yeshua would teach that on the mountain of Beatitudes. Now later the Israelites were at each other's throats in Egypt, which is why they could not stand up united against Pharaoh and avoid their slavery. The slavery in itself was a natural results punishment that happened because they would not love each other. They were looking for retaliation and vengeance every time they brought a conflict to Moses. The fact that he had to judge these matters tells us what they were doing to each other in Egypt even before the Exodus, and what they brought out of Egypt with them. Unresolved conflicts divide, and division causes defeat. A house divided cannot stand. The only way that first generation became united was when the lamb's blood was put on the doorpost and they left Egypt together. But as soon as they were out of Egypt, it was back to the same old confrontations until Moses was wearing himself out trying to fix everyone's problems with each other. Their hard hearts and desire to do harm for harm done, eye for eye, led to the addition of these mishpatim, the judgments. Like Moses at Mount Sinai, Yeshua began his ministry on a mountain by addressing the issues and conflicts facing the Israelites in Judea. 1,500 years later, those same issues were still not only unresolved, but had grown to much greater proportions. Their continued disunity was so great that they had been unable to have a united 12-tribed kingdom in that 1,500-year period for no more than 40 years under King David. So Yeshua addressed the retaliation and vengeance issues of that day, but he gave them another choice. Matthew 5:38. You have heard that it was said, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But I say to you, do not resist the evil, but whoever strikes you on the right cheek, turn the other to him also. And to him desiring to sue you and to take your tunic, allow him also to have the coat. And whoever shall compel you to go 1 mile, go 2 with him. He asking you to give and he wishing to borrow from you, do not turn away. Yeshua addressed their desire for retaliation and vengeance, part of which was the seeking of a Messiah to rescue them from Rome. They first, though, needed to rescue themselves from their own wickedness. What did Yeshua say before he addressed the eye for an eye law of retaliation in Mishpatim? Matthew 5:2. Opening his mouth, he taught them, saying, blessed are the poor in spirit, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are those who recognize their own spiritual poverty because they are operating out of the folly of the natural man. The kingdom of heaven belongs to those who recognize the evil of their natural desires and instead choose to operate through Yahweh's Spirit like Moses did. Matthew 5:4. Blessed are the ones who mourn, for they shall be comforted. Now this I have taken back to Ezekiel 9, well-known passage, to those who mourn over the destruction of the altar. In Yeshua's day, the altar was defiled because of the ruination of the entire temple system. But it wasn't just this that the people mourned over. They also mourned over their unresolved conflicts with each other and the fact that they still have a captor, Rome, and they had Rome, a captor, for the same reason that their ancestors were captives in Egypt. Matthew 5:5. Blessed are the meek, for they shall inherit the earth. The Hebrew word for meek is anav. Its first use in Scripture is when Miriam got Aaron to help her oppose Moses because of her jealousy of him in Numbers 12. Moses was anav, humble, the most humble man on the face of the earth. But what does that mean? It means that he did not defend himself or seek retaliation or vengeance. Sitting on that mountain, judging conflicts all day long, day after day, and seeing that the natural man will not be satisfied with any punishment handed out, taught Moses to let Yahweh handle situations. David also understood that falling into the hands of men was far worse than being punished by Yahweh. When he had sinned in doing the census, the prophet Gad offered David 3 options. 7 years of famine, fleeing for 3 months before his enemies, or 3 days of plague. 2 Samuel 24:14 says, David said to Gad, I am in great distress. Let us fall now into the hand of Yahweh, for his mercies are great. And do not let me fall into the hand of man. Such is man's natural hatred and wickedness that it cannot be satisfied even through laws designed to do just that, satisfy them. The law of retaliation is Yahweh's answer through Moses to the hideousness of man's desire for unlimited punishment of others, and is there to show us how we are not to act. It is there for our education, just like Paul said of the schoolmaster in the same chapter 3 of Galatians, from where I quoted earlier. Matthew 5, verse 6, blessed are they who hunger and thirst after righteousness, for they shall be filled. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they shall see God. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. Mishpatim, judgments, the eye for eye law of retaliation, are designed for people to collect a debt through punishment of the one who harmed them. But Matthew 6:9, still with Yeshua on the mountain of Beatitudes, says, therefore pray in this way: Our Father who is in heaven, hallowed be your name, your kingdom come, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our debts as, or like, we also forgive our debtors. And Luke puts it this way: and forgive us our sins, for we ourselves also forgive everyone who is indebted to us. That is what Yeshua spoke even before he got to the eye for an eye law, the Mishpatim judgments, except for what's in that chapter, Matthew 6. But all of those other blessed are, that was all spoken before he got down to the eye for eye and addressing the eye for eye. The truth is, we have all done hurts to others, and they have done hurts to us. So is the solution more and more and greater punishment of each other? Or is the solution forgiveness of each other? This is the spirit of the law of Mishpatim, the eye for eye judgments, the law of retaliation. Forgiveness, not retribution. Forgiveness is the opposite of the Mishpatim judgments, those laws regulating retaliation, isn't it? So it appears to oppose Mishpatim, doesn't it? Yes, it does appear that way. Was Yeshua doing away with Mishpatim then? Was he doing away with those eye-for-eye judgments? No, but he was explaining what 1,500 years of spiritual blindness could not see. There is a choice between the natural and spiritual inclinations of man, and both are legal in Yahweh's kingdom. But which option serves the kingdom better? The option that a person chooses shows whether he is operating from the natural or the spiritual. Is he following the letter of the law, the natural inclination, or is he making the spiritual and wiser choice of forgiveness? Let's read again the law of retaliation, which summarizes all of what Mishpatim is about. Exodus 21:23. And if any injury occurs, then you shall give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burning for burning, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. Oh, there's one. Yeshua's stripes. Has he retaliated for his undeserved stripes on our behalf? No, he took our deserved stripes. You see, there is another choice. You do not have to retaliate for injuries to yourself. In fact, the law of love says you will absorb the injury and let Yahweh deal with it. Matthew 24:35 says, the heaven and the earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away. So his law is his law. It will all remain. Mishpatim, the judgments, will always be with us, even if it's only as a reminder of what we once were, and still are at this point. His lesson in the Beatitudes is one of choosing what Moses chose, non-retaliation for what others do to us, and even going a step further to bless and pray for those who hurt us in Matthew 5:43-48. Now, why would Yahweh allow retaliation when non-retaliation is the better choice? because of how many of his people walk after the natural rather than the spiritual. Yahweh is so merciful that he allows people to be blind to what is better until such time as they cry out for what is better. In fact, Scripture says in many places that Yahweh himself blinds their eyes because of their stubbornness, and when they do that, they are going to naturally act out of their natural inclinations. Isaiah 6:9 says, "Go and tell this people, you hear indeed, but don't understand, and you see indeed, but don't perceive." That's the natural man. He hears, but does not understand, sees, and does not perceive. The manifestation of this in our own lives is in those who, quote unquote, just don't get it when it comes to Yahweh's word. And Isaiah 6:10 then says, "Make the heart of this people fat, make their ears heavy, and shut their eyes, lest they see with their eyes and hear with their ears and understand with their heart and turn again and be healed." Now, this next section is called the Spirit of Mishpatim in Mishpatim. So all of that other stuff already said, Mishpatim does not start with the eye for eye law of retaliation. While the law of retaliation does exist in this Torah portion, it starts with the spirit of the law. It starts with how Yahweh wants his people to be servants to each other. Exodus 21:1. "And these are the judgments, Mishpatim, which you shall set before them." So this is Yahweh speaking to Moses. You know, Yahweh is giving these Mishpatim judgments to Moses. But I just said that they came from Moses, right? So how can it be that Yahweh is giving these Mishpatim judgments to Moses? Well, let's review that. Matthew 18:15. "But if your brother shall trespass against you, go and tell him his fault between you and him alone. If he hears you, you have gained your brother. But if he will not hear you, take one or two more with you, so that in the mouth of two or three witnesses every word may be established. And if he shall neglect to hear them, tell it to the church. But if he neglects to hear the church, let him be to you as a heathen and a tax collector. Truly I say to you, whatever you shall bind on earth shall occur, having been bound in heaven. And whatever you shall loose on earth shall occur, having been loosed in heaven." The Matthew 18 protocol for conflict resolution binds and looses in heaven whatever is bound or loosed on the earth when this protocol is followed. Matthew 18 comes from Deuteronomy 17, which, after a matter has been judged, it becomes law. In other words, it is bound in heaven. Yahweh was telling Moses to announce the judged matters and their sentences that they had been bringing to him on the mountain. But first, before we got to any of that eye for eye stuff, Yahweh would tell Moses, "Start with this. This is how I really want my people to behave." And, you know, they can hear the rest of this later, but let's start with the spirit of the law, shall we? So in Exodus 21:2, it says, "If you buy a Hebrew servant, he shall serve 6 years, and in the seventh he shall go out free for nothing." Yahweh's kingdom is a service kingdom. Everyone are servants. Even Israel's king, Yeshua, Matthew 20:28 says, "Even as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve, and to give his life a ransom for many." Israel, the nation, is called the servant of Yahweh in Leviticus 25:5, Isaiah 41:8, 44:1, and 49:3, and Luke 1:54. Yahweh here is trying to create a service-oriented and equality-based kingdom where everyone takes care of everyone else and cares more about the other guy than himself. This is how everyone remains equal in this covenant. Additionally, the law about how to treat servants is Yahweh explaining how he will treat his people, and this is how we are to treat each other. It was this from which Yeshua drew on the mountain of Beatitudes, this spirit of the law. And James well explains the better spiritual theme of Mishpatim, James 2:14. My brothers, what profit is it if a man says he has faith and does not have works? Can faith save him? If a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and if one of you says to them, go in peace, be warmed and filled, but you do not give them those things which are needful to the body, what good is it? We are all servants, and we each should be taking care of everyone else more than ourselves. Philippians 2:3. Let nothing be done through strife or vainglory, but in lowliness of mind, let each esteem others better than themselves. Now, I've said it over the years and many times, and I'll probably say it many more times, I'm sure. If each individual will make sure everyone else is taken care of first, every individual will have all of their own needs met. Let me give you an example. In a room with 100 people, I am making sure all of those other 99 are fed, they have water, clothing, places to live away from the elements, and they're secure and protected, provided for, even encouraged, prayed for, loved, and happy. Then all of my own needs will be met automatically because 99 other people are looking out for me. I look out for the 99, and the 99 look out for me. Isn't this awesome? This is Yeshua's justice, and this is the covenant he made with the children of Israel at Mount Sinai that they ratified in Exodus 24. That covenant is not just rules. It is the spirit of the kingdom of Israel, the spirit of our God and King. No one is better or more important than anyone else. We have different jobs to do in the kingdom, and the kingdom needs everyone doing the job that's assigned to us, but our jobs do not make some more important than others on the social scale. We are not to be served, but to serve. Servants who are busy serving others don't have time for the nonsense of conflicts. Servants want to resolve the conflicts. They want to be peacemakers and move on to be about their Father's business, the business of running the kingdom, so that Gentiles can be saved and enter. Service is another word for love. John 13:34. I give you a new commandment, that you love one another. As I have loved you, you should also love one another. By this, all will know that you are my disciples, if you have love, or you give service toward one another. So what does love look like in Yahweh's kingdom? You know, it does have an external appearance. So what does it look like? If we serve one another, the world will say, we love one another. If we don't serve one another, the world will say we hate each other. It is really that simple. This is the spiritual understanding of the law of Hebrew servants. In Exodus 21, verses 1 and 2, Yahweh has made provision for one of his needy servants to get help from another of his not-so-needy servants. Our King provides help for his people through other people. This is a service kingdom and culture. And this is part of Yahweh's economic system too, but it has regulations for mutual benefit of both parties, the one who needs a do-over and the one who can provide the do-over. Yahweh made this a judgment, a mishpat, because of how oppressors turn others into slaves. In his heavenly court, he saw what happened. And he saw what happened to his people in Egypt, and he said, I'm not going to let my people do that. Let me make a judgment right here and now. We're not going to do that to each other. You know, Moses sat in his court on the mountain. Yahweh sat in his court in the heavens. And we got these judgments, these mishpatim from that. Yahweh does not allow slavery, the lifetime oppression of people. In Yahweh's system, servants have rights. And anything less than the kind of treatment specified in the judgments, the mishpatim, is a sin, a crime against the people and the kingdom. If there is to be a lifelong commitment to the one called master, it must come from the servant whom the master helped. It must never be imposed by the master. You know, the Jews made this terrible mistake of imposing lifetime slavery on their Hebrew brethren in Jeremiah 34, which is our Haftarah, for which Yahweh sent the sword of Babylon after them. Now let's talk about the Hebrew maiden and the prevention of her mistreatment. Exodus 21:8. If she does not please her master who has betrothed, and it says there in the Hebrew for betrothed, lo ya'ad, her to himself, then he shall let her be redeemed. He shall have no power to sell her to a strange nation, since he has dealt deceitfully, bagad, with her. Well, there are two problems with most of the English translations of this. The first is that the Hebrew does not say that he is betrothed to her. It says he is not betrothed to her. It says lo ya'ad. The Hebrew word lo, Strong's H3808, means no and not, but for some reason is left untranslated in most English versions. The literal standard and Young's literal versions both have this correct, that this man is not betrothed to this maiden, and therefore he doesn't owe her the rights of betrothal, and there's no deceit from him in this regard. Ellicott's commentary says the reading is to be preferred, which gives the opposite sense, who has not betrothed her. So perhaps there was supposed to be a future offer of betrothal, but at this point, he has not betrothed her. About this situation, the translations also say he has dealt deceitfully with her. Well, the Hebrew word there is bagad, Beit Gimel Dalet, Strong's H897, which is translated as treachery throughout Scripture. But remembering that ancient Hebrew has no vowel points, we may come to understand this mistake. There is another Hebrew word from the same root, which means covering or to cover. It is Strong's H899, Beged, again, Beit Gimel Dalet. This covering is not the same word used for most articles of clothing, although a beged in ancient Israel was the outer garment they wore. But I think there is a different meaning here. What is a covering, spiritually speaking? It is her protection and provision. If we put ourselves in her shoes for a moment, I think we can understand this. Here she is, a maiden, never married, and was probably sold to this man by her family for up to 6 years, certainly not forever. And they are expecting to get her back after that time. Well, this man needs to provide this maiden with the provision of food, clothing, lodging, and protection of her life, you know, security. In other words, he was her covering just as her father was. He was her beged. And seeing her, or I'm sorry, selling her would have been done by her father to help a bad financial situation. You know, he would have sold her to this man in exchange for money with the understanding that the man will be free to marry her if he so chooses. If he does not choose to marry her, though, he has options. You see, Yahweh doesn't leave us with no options. Instead, he gives us options. You know, like earlier, we had the option, retaliation or forgiveness. See? This man's options are to let her be redeemed by her family or give her to his son, Exodus 21:8. And since he was her covering, he cannot mistreat her by doing any kind of retaliation to her because she displeased him. You know, he can't sell her to a foreigner of another nation. This is to prevent her from becoming a slave of any kind in any nation, including being a sex slave. Exodus 29, and if he has betrothed her to his son, he shall deal with her as with daughters. Now, there is some security, because this situation means that if his son takes her, she becomes his daughter. And even if at the end of all this she's able to leave, if the son doesn't do what he's supposed to do, she is still this man's daughter. She still has a covering. She cannot be mistreated by this man for any reason, even if she displeases him. The most that he can do is let her family redeem her or allow his son to take her as his wife. That's mercy. If the son takes her, he cannot ever reduce her provision and protection, including her conjugal rights, which make it possible for her to bear children, in Exodus 21:10. And if the son does not continue taking care of her properly, then she can go free. But, of course, this will shine the light on what kind of man he is. And let me repeat, she is his father's daughter, so she still has provision and protection, you see? Isaiah tells us what Mishpatim will look like in our future. This is our future, folks. I love this. Isaiah 52:1, awake, awake, put on your strength, Zion, put on your beautiful robes, O Jerusalem, the holy city. For never again shall uncircumcised and unclean ones come to you. Shake yourself from the dust. Rise up. Sit, Jerusalem. Free yourself from your neck bands, O captive daughter of Zion. For so says Yahweh, you were sold for nothing, and you will not be redeemed with silver. For so says the Lord Yahweh, my people went down to Egypt at the first to reside there, and without cause Assyria oppressed him. So then, what is it to me here, declares Yahweh, for my people is taken for nothing. Those ruling howl, declares Yahweh, and my name is continually despised every day. So my people shall know my name in that day, for I am he speaking. Behold me. How beautiful on the mountains are the feet of him proclaiming good news. By the way, Moses and Yeshua, their feet were on the mountains proclaiming good news. And they were making peace heard, bearing tidings of good, making heard salvation, saying to Zion, your God reigns. The voice of your watchman. They lift the voice together. They sing aloud. And here is where it gets interesting for how we will be in the future. For they shall see eye to eye when Yahweh brings back Zion. Eye to eye rather than eye for eye. The reason we cannot find love among us is because we still refuse to serve. We refuse to put others before ourselves. We refuse to forgive their sins. This selfishness has consequences for everyone who does this in the past and in the present and in the future. So let's talk about what our covenant is supposed to be and what it will be in the future. Matthew 25:31. But when the Son of Man comes in His glory and all the holy angels with Him, then He shall sit on the throne of His glory, and all nations shall be gathered before Him, and He shall separate them from one another as a shepherd divides the sheep from the goats. Yeshua is talking here about the end of the 6,000 years going into the 7th millennium, when there will be the resurrection and He will judge His people and all the nations just as He is arriving on the earth. And why will He be judging the nations with His people? Well, Israel has been scattered in the nations for 2,700 plus years, and He now wants to see if Israel has taught the covenant to the nations, and if the nations have learned the covenant. From the time of the giving of the law, Israel was supposed to teach the nations Yahweh's justice. They were supposed to be able to progress toward understanding and doing the spirit of the law rather than adhering to the letter of it. You know, the reason the Talmud exists is because of spiritual blindness. The Jews' spiritual blindness is the result of continuing only in the letter of the law to the satisfaction of the natural man over progressing to walk in the spirit of the law, in Yahweh's spirit, which satisfies the spiritual man. Matthew 25:33. And indeed He shall set the sheep on His right hand, but the goats off the left. Being set on His right hand has to do with whether or not we have created in us a righteous and resurrectable seed, as taught by Paul. The sheep will enter His kingdom, the goats will not. Verse 34. Then the King shall say to those on His right hand, Come, blessed of My Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry, and you gave me food. I was thirsty, and you gave me drink. I was a stranger, and you took me in. I was naked, and you clothed me. I was sick, and you visited me. I was in prison, and you came to me. When did Yahweh say these things are the things that Israelites are supposed to do? Well, in Exodus 21-24, in the Torah portion called Mishpatim. It's just that the natural man can't see that. Verse 37. When the righteous shall answer Him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and fed you, or thirsty and gave you drink? When did we see you a stranger and took you in, or naked and clothed you? Or when did we see you sick or in prison and came to you? It's interesting that those who serve do so to the point that they don't view their service as somehow extraordinary, isn't it? Verse 40. And the King shall answer and say to them, Truly I say to you, inasmuch as you did it to one of the least of these My brothers, you have done it to Me. Well, who is protected the most in Yahweh's spirit of the law? The least among us. Now, we're not to have respect of persons toward someone who is poor, but that doesn't, just because they're poor doesn't mean they're least. Who identifies others as least and as great? Well, the natural man. The spiritual man doesn't see least or not as good or not as worthy, etc. Those are labels that come from the natural and rebellious man. The spiritual man sees everyone as equal or better. Matthew 25:41. Then He also shall say to those on the left hand, Depart from Me, you cursed, into everlasting fire prepared for the devil and his angels. So those who never progress to the spirit of the law cannot enter the kingdom, because in the final analysis, the kingdom is a service nation, and those who refuse to humble themselves to serve others just won't fit in there. The unrighteous, the non-servants, will be told to depart from Him because they neither learned to serve or cared for others. Verse 42. For I was hungry, and you gave me no food. I was thirsty, and you gave me no drink. I was a stranger, and you did not take me in. I was naked, and you did not clothe me. I was sick and in prison, and you did not visit me. Then they will also answer him, saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry or thirsty, or a stranger, or naked, or sick, or in prison, and did not minister to you? Then he shall answer them, saying, truly I say to you, inasmuch as you did not do it to one of the least of these, you did not do it to me. You nations, your justice is perverted and skewed toward the greatest, not the least. Matthew 25:46. And these shall go away into everlasting punishment, but the righteous into everlasting life. What more can be said?